topic is when things go bad, litigation. Going to secular courts, going to Basting, what are the options? So in front of us we have a case, hopefully you guys have read it, titled Arkos. Arkos is the term for secular court. We'll refer to it as a secular court, Arkos, or a Beit Mishpat, a house of judgment, as opposed to a Jewish court governed by halacha, which is called a Basting. So Beit Mishpat or a Basting. In the case in front of us, we have a scenario of a service provider named Chaim Semler. What's his occupation? Who can help me out here?
Plumber.
He's a plumber. And he was hired by?
Solstein.
Who is a? What's his occupation?
Landlord.
Nice guy or not a nice guy?
Seemingly nice guy.
Seemingly the landlord? Seemingly nice guy. And actually?
To be determined.
Doesn't look like the nicest of guys. Looks like we would say in Yiddish, a Vilde Chaya. Vilde Chaya looks like a successful but unfortunately unethical business person, landlord. And he effectively is taking advantage of the plumber. Is the money owed or is the money not owed? Owed. What happened? Give me some information, Ben.
He gave him an estimate. The plumber gave Solstein an estimate, and then Solstein kind of reneged and said that he's not going to pay him for what he had said, what he had agreed to, that he's only going to pay him for the supplies and not for the labor, which was... I was a little confused about that, but...
The supplies were
$50. He told him
to pay him. Did he sign the estimate?
Yes.
He signed the estimate. $400 was the estimate. And then in the end of the day, he says, I'm going to pay you $50 for your out-of-pocket cost, but not for your time, which was the balance of the $350. That is upsetting. New plumber trying to get going on his business, and he's being stiffed. And he has a quandary, what should he do? What's going on in his mind here?
He's the underdog against a well-known guy in court.
If he goes to, well,
business.
First, it could really hurt his chances of getting more business, either from him or other people, if people think of him as a troublemaker. So that's one thing, but he knows he's right. So he's considering what his options are, and what are the options? Going to... A Basting, or going to a Basting, right? Or how do you set up a Basting? And if it's not a Basting, he can go to potentially a secular court. And that's what he's going through right now, is he's trying to figure out what are his options. So there's actually a Gemara, there's a Pasuk. We'll start with the Pasuk, Parshas Mishpatim, that says, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. These are the Mishpatim, these are the laws that you should put in front of Kol Yisrael in the Gemara. In Gittin, Peches Amid Beis makes a drasha, two drashas actually. The first drasha is, Eilu HaMishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem. These are the laws that you should put in front of them. The Gemara tells us that those are the laws that you have to put in front of a Basting. If you have to adjudicate a problem, you have to go Lifneihem, a Basting, and not to a secular court. That's the first drasha that's in the Gemara. The second drasha that's in the Gemara is Lifneihem, V'lo Lifnei Hadyotos, that you have to go to a Basting, but not to a court that has unqualified judges. So even if they're Jewish, even if they're trying, but if they're not qualified, we can't go to them. We're going to leave that second drasha for a later date to discuss the possibilities of going through arbitration and mediation as opposed to a secular court. Does anyone know what the difference is between arbitration, mediation, litigation, all these big Asian words? Should I go through it? Would that be helpful? Okay, welcome to Litigation 101 in the Law School of War Sameach. Okay, so it goes like this. Litigation is when you sue somebody. And the way it works is you send out in Israel, they call it a hazmana, I believe. And we would define that as an invitation, hazmana, lazmin. We get a hazmana to a wedding, so it's kind of funny to hear that. At least in a base thing, they call it a hazmana. You're being invited to participate in a litigation, I don't know, in the secular courts in Hebrew, as they call it. In the United States and probably other jurisdictions, we call it a summons. You are being summoned to court. Somebody's suing you, there's a lawsuit that's filed, and you are served a summons. That means somebody will come with the documents, usually in person, and will serve you. You've probably seen it on the various TV shows when somebody gets sued and they try to find the guy, and the guy dodges trying to be served, and you search him out, and you finally find him, hiding him back of the big dumpster because he doesn't want to be served with a lawsuit. So that's called being summoned to a lawsuit. So that's litigation. That's how a litigation starts, and that gets the ball rolling in a civil suit in a secular court. Another option in place of litigation would be going to arbitration. Arbitration is not going to a court with a judge that's presiding as a judge and making the decision, but it would be going to an arbitrator. It's less formal, but also formal. It's typically quicker. An arbitrator is someone that will make a decision. Both sides will present their sides, but he arbitrates between the sides. But ultimately, it's a binding decision by the arbitrator, but a less formal, less costly process. That's arbitration. The difference between arbitration and mediation, mediation is not binding. The mediator is not empowered by the two sides to make a binding decision that even the losing party will have to adhere to. Mediation is a very interesting process. The way it works is both sides so show up. Anyone ever been to a mediation before? No one? Okay, just me. So the way it works is very interesting. Both sides show up. They have submitted documents in advance to the mediator. Mediators are typically former judges or other people with good credentials that know what they're doing, hopefully. The two sides will choose the mediator that they agree to. You'll submit briefs. You'll submit documents to the mediator beforehand so he knows what's going on. And each will have a turn to present their side. They're in the room together. They are glaring at each other because that's the person that they're in the fight with. They're sitting on opposite sides of the table. And the mediator's at the front of the table, and they each give their pitch. They'll have 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. And then typically, at least the mediations I've been in, the mediator will separate them into separate rooms and will shuttle back and forth between the two sides, trying to bring them closer, to bridge the gap, to bring a settlement between the two. And it typically goes like this. The mediator will go to one side and discuss with them what they feel are the strengths and weaknesses of their case. And he'll give his opinion. And he'll say, if you go on to court, I believe that your case is lacking in these areas, and this is really going to present a problem to you. Or your case is strong, but still maybe you want to give a little bit because you don't want to wind up in litigation. That's a very expensive process. And he will shuttle between the two sides. It's a slow, long process. It could take a number of hours, day, 2 days. It can go on, depending on how difficult it is. The sides could just say, we're not going to bother with this. It's a waste of time. We don't see any way that we're going to be able to bridge the gap between the two sides. So that's mediation. Big difference between arbitration and mediation. Arbitration is binding. Mediation is not. It's up to the mediator to bridge the gap between the two sides. So today's topic is talking about is litigation. Going to a secular court, is that an option? And the Gemara in Gittin is telling us that we have an obligation to go to a Beis Din and not to go to secular court. There's a Medrash Tanchuma that tells us that even if the laws are the same between the Jewish court, between the Torah, and between the secular court, we are nonetheless obligated to go to the Beis Din, the Jewish court, and not go to the secular court. Why? Because the Pasuk tells us, Asher Tasim Lifneihem. Lifneihem means go to the Beis Din, not the secular court. And the Medrash tells us as follows, anyone who decides to not use the services of a Beis Din, but go to a secular court, Kafar b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tchila, that is a rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it is a rejection of the Torah itself. Right.
Doesn't the Torah say, like, you can't give a judge money because it, like, blinds his judgment?
Correct, that's Shochad, right.
So surely the fact that if that Beis Din would accept his case, then it would be like, they would be breaking a halacha there because they benefit from this guy's tzedakah.
You're talking about a Beit Mishpat, a secular court, or a Beis Din?
The Beis Din here, it says that, well, they got tzedakah from him, so surely they would.
What is it? Oh, you're talking about in that case. Okay, but let's get to that at the end, Amir Tzashem. Okay, thank you, Ryan. We'll get back to that when we go through the sugya. We'll get back to what should happen there. Yeah.
What if you live in a town that doesn't have a Beis Din, though?
Very good question. That's when we're going to have the part B talking about if litigation is a big problem. There's no Beis Din. How about arbitration and mediation? Those will have to be that the options will defer to, and if those aren't the options, then you have to get on a plane. Or can you use Jews that aren't qualified, but you're in a situation that, effectively, that would be using arbitration or mediation with unqualified. That's the second drush in the Gemara that we saw. So we'll have to get to that as the follow-up topic. Okay, so the Rambam paskens the same thing, the Shulchan Aruch paskens the same thing. We need to go to a Beis Din, we can't go to a secular court. The Rambam uses the language that anyone does go to a secular court is a rush and is an evil person, it is blasphemy. And the Sma explains very concisely what the issue is. He says, Marek ilu Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu mishpatat eino emes. It looks like you don't esteem the value of the Torah that it's going to make the decision. The secular law is more important, more useful to you in making your claim than using the Torah itself. Yeah?
What happens if there are non-Jews involved in the case?
We'll get to that. Such a good question. What if the litigation is not between two Jews, but a Jew and non-Jew? You have partners. It's two Jews, but it's a non-Jewish insurance company that's going to be covering the claim. How about then? So how about if it's a Jewish company, but it's a publicly held? It's Jewish controlled, publicly held, and their bylaws say it. They'll only allow going to a secular court. Mir Tashem will get to all those. Very good question. Okay, let's continue. How severe a prohibition is this, and when does the prohibition start? So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows, how severe an issue it is in the Ramah. We're in Choshen Mishpat Shem Chavav. The Ramah says, V'yesh Beis Din, V'yesh Biad Beis Din Lindoso Ulachlimo. The Beis Din would have the power to put the litigant who's going to secular court into Peirim, that's excommunication, put him into Nidoy, until he stops the case and goes to a Beis Din. And he adds on as follows to the attorneys here and to the future attorneys. V'chein hayu machrimim hamachzik biyot ha'olech lifnei ovdei kochavim. Anyone else who is involved in the litigation that is facilitating that going to secular court is also can be put in chayrim. That would mean an attorney who is representing a client to go to secular court would also be in a position of being put into chayrim. And the poskim also say that such a person is pasul le'edus, cannot act as an aid, cannot act as a witness, for example, in court, but also cannot act as a witness as an aid kiddushin at a wedding. Somebody, strictly speaking, brought a litigation in secular court that was not allowed to, that person would be pasul le'edus. Now, an interesting question also, how about if both sides have consented together, let's go to secular court? They've agreed. You know, we know we're in a fight together, but where's the proper form for that we should go to decide this debate between us? And they both agree, let's go to the state court in Los Angeles, downtown. The most convenient for both of them. Easy parking. Takes a little bit of time to get through the metal detector, but other than that, it's a bit of a hassle, but we think we want to go to that secular court. Is that still a prohibition, or is that not a prohibition? Both sides have consented. What do we think?
Prohibitions.
It's that what?
Prohibition.
Prohibition, why?
You can't decide mutually to go against Torah.
If the concept is that it's a disgrace to the Torah, it doesn't matter if one side is schlepping the other into court or both are agreeing, it's still a disgrace, even more so that they're consenting together to go to the secular court. So that is indeed a problem. We paskin in Shulchan Aruch, even if both sides have agreed. And a similar thing would be, there's a prohibition to charge a Jew interest. But what happens if the lender and the borrower have agreed, I want a loan, borrower says, I want a loan, okay, let's set 10%, and we both agree. The Torah says that it's prohibited, the parties cannot opt out of that prohibition. So even if both sides have consented, there is still a problem. How about if it's a court in a Muslim country, so they are monotheistic, according to many opinions? Is it still a problem using their court system?
Yes.
Yes, why?
They don't go
there. Still choosing a system of law in place of the Torah. So indeed, that would be a problem. The Tashbit says that. He was writing from Algeria. It's actually a descendant of the Tashbits writing this in the 16th century, that the prohibition includes going in a Muslim land, even though that they are not idolaters, it is still a disgrace to the Torah. Next question, yes?
What if it's going to a secular court? Could the Beis Din give permission to go to a secular
court? So we'll get to that in Mir Tashem. Great question. Next question then. We are now in the State of Israel. You know where I'm going on that, right? So Baruch Hashem, we have a place, we have a land of our own. I took a taxi driver a week ago, and he was telling, it is fantastic, we have the land of Israel, 100% correct. We have a place of our home, that's a home for us. We were homeless for so many years, and we have to. He was telling me his story. He came, and he was growing up in the 50s. He's a little kid in the 50s in Eretz Yisrael. And he said that his parents came, I forget from where, Iran, Iraq, something like that. They were a family of 11, nine kids, a family of 11, and the government was giving out one room per family. So they had four kids per bed in the one room. And you remember when he was born, the president of Israel gave like his parents a voucher to get more eggs because they had another kid in the family to help them out. Like, so he says, and this is the person saying, things are really good. We have to be positive about the land of Israel, and that's 100% true. However, can we go to a secular court in the land of Israel? They are Jewish, for the most part, but can we use the court system here in Israel? We would have a similar question potentially going to a secular court elsewhere, and the judge presiding is Jewish. There are some Orthodox judges. We're not here to judge them. We're not going to judge the judges, but there are some Orthodox judges in New York, for example. Would it be less of a problem or a bigger problem having a case in front of a Jewish judge? What do we think there?
The Sanhedrin was the law of the land and the court of the land, that we could, but since we don't have the Sanhedrin, we can't go to the courts. They're considered secular, even though
they are secular. So if the concept is we're using a law other than, unfortunately, the secular courts in Israel are not using Torah law. Maybe it's something that they consider. My brother was on a trip once to Israel with a bunch of professors from Harvard, and he went to visit the Supreme Court in Israel, and they met the Muslim, the Arab Supreme Court justice, and he said, this is the most difficult job you can imagine, because when there's not precedent in deciding a case, he says, we have to defer to, and he showed on his bookshelf, a Tanakh, a Quran, and a New Testament, right? So he says, that's where they look. So the Supreme Court is like using the Tanakh as one of three bases for making a decision. This is not Torah law. This is a composite of other laws, primarily adopted from England. Ottoman laws adopted the common law in Europe, brought over to Eretz Yisrael. It is not governed by Torah. So, the Chazon Ish says as follows when it comes to a Jewish judge. Chazon Ish lived 1878 to 1953. The Gadol Ador, one of the Gadolei Ador, certainly in Israel was the Gadol Ador, and his generation, it doesn't matter whether the people are Jewish, whether Jewish or not Jewish, if you're using the wrong set of laws, that's a problem. And it's even worse if it is a Jew using a secular set of laws. That's the Chazon Ish. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, I'll just give a little bit of background on him. He lived 1874 to 1960. In 1907, he was appointed a dayan, a judge in the Jerusalem Rabbinic Court, headed by Rav Shmuel Salant, the rabbi of Jerusalem. He was active in establishing the chief rabbinate, and he served as the Rav of Jerusalem for many decades. So he says as follows, a Jew that judges based on non-Jewish law, any non-Jewish law, is worse than a non-Jew judging based on non-Jewish law, because non-Jews are obligated. One of the seven Noahite laws is deeming to set up a court system. They are obligated to set up a court system. Doesn't have to be in accordance with Torah if you're not Jewish, but a Jew must adjudicate based on Torah law. And he says the same thing. It's a blasphemy. It's the same thing. It's a problem with somebody who goes and litigates in front of a Jewish judge. And he says, Tzar lanu, it is sorrowful to us, shechuki me'ela, that the Jewish state and the Knesset have adopted non-Jewish law when Jewish law should have been adopted. Rav Herzog, who was the Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Israel, says, even stronger language, Shika'es Kasher Am Yisrael Shochem Be'atzor, now that we are in our own country, L'da'avon Libeinu, it's to our sorrow, to the sorrow of our hearts, that we are using non-Jewish law. Hadavar Chamor Elef Pamim Yoser, it's 1,000 times worse than a Jew going to a secular court, that the entire court system has been set up based on non-Jewish law. We have a number of questions going on here. Yeah.
What about a Jewish judge in a
in America only presiding over non-Jewish litigation?
It's a very good question. I could see it both ways. I've seen it written on it before. Some have seen that said that we're facilitating, it's a positive thing because we are facilitating deen. We are facilitating their adhering to the seven Noahide laws, yeah. A positive thing, or is it a negative thing? I think if somebody's in that situation, a question should be asked on a practical basis. It doesn't happen because there may be a Jewish litigant that comes in front of you. So practically speaking, it is impossible to say I'm only adjudicating when non-Jews come in front of you. So the technicality is a real problem. Yeah?
Same question.
Good question. Okay. When does the prohibition start when going to secular court? When does it kick in? So the RIF says as follows, Shekola mazmin es chaveiro b'fei akaros minani nato. As soon as you summon somebody, it starts with the summons. You send out an invitation, the summons to come, you serve somebody to come to secular court. The RIF says it's a problem. Rav Moshe Sternbach, a contemporary major posik in Eretz Yisrael, says each and every day that the judging, that the court is going on, that the case is going on in the secular venue, that is a prohibition. Yes?
Are there lawyers in Jewish law based in, or is that...
Yeah, you can. Doesn't need to be, but you can, absolutely. Okay, so interesting question now. If anyone's ever negotiated a contract before, an employment contract, when you were hired, if you were hired as a consultant, whatever it may be, and sometimes in that contract, in the way back, there's something called a choice of law clause. Anyone know what that is? Daniel, what's that? What's the choice of law clause?
Basically, which jurisdiction you or which law you want to govern an agreement that if something goes wrong.
If something goes wrong, what's going to happen? Now, on a high level first, the contract is going to say, are we going to litigate and go to secular court? Or are we going to arbitrate? Mediation we're going to put aside because it's not binding. Or your third option is going to base thing. Those are your three options. The contract. The contract should say what's going to happen if all things fall apart. I always say that if you're already pulling out a contract, people work hard in negotiating contracts. Every word is negotiated. You pull out contracts for two reasons after they're signed. Reason number one is you just have to look how economics are computed. That's fine, okay, if a person's getting paid, how much is it, how often. The other reason is because things fell apart. You're already pulling out the contract. It's a bad sign because typically we negotiate them, put them away, forget about them. If that contract is coming out, it's typically a problem. So in the back of the contract is something called the venue, the jurisdiction. What are you going to do? Actually, there are a couple things in there. Choice number one, is it going to be litigation, arbitration, or basting is number one. Even if it's going to be litigation, there are two major things that have to be chosen. Where's the litigation going to be? If you have a company from New York and a company from Los Angeles, company from Los Angeles is going to want to litigate in Hawaii, because it's a much nicer place. No, in New York, is going to go to Florida. No, if you're in New York, you want to be in New York. You have your own attorneys there. You don't want to pay to travel if you're in Los Angeles. So you're going to have to decide where the location of a lawsuit, which court, federal, state. State is less expensive. Federal is typically a better court. And also the choice of law. Even if you're choosing to be in Los Angeles, which is California, you may want to choose to use New York law in California, which is a little bit of a strange, but it does happen. So it's a company that says, we're familiar with Delaware law. A lot of corporations like Delaware law. So they say Delaware law, but we'll have it in New York or Illinois or whatever it may be. So that's all litigation. So the question that was posed to Rav Naftali Nussbaum, who is a contemporary posik nowadays, is how about just signing the contract? We're not planning on going. At least one of the sides is not planning on going to secular court. But just saying in the contract, if all things fall apart, we will go to a secular court. Just signing that contract, is that a problem or is that not a problem? Very interesting question. I've been in this situation a number of times, even between... If you have an Orthodox Jew and even a secular Jew, and the Orthodox Jew wants to put in basting, and the secular Jew says, I'm not familiar with that, my attorney won't let me do that, how about signing a contract that says that the sides consent to secular court, even though the Orthodox Jew is saying, I'm never planning on going. So the Naftali Nussbaum was asked this question, and he says, Ki etzem achasima omeris, once even signing the contract, that is saying that you are accepting upon yourself the secular court. So even signing that contract, he's of the view that it's a problem, and even if that the one side is not planning on going, I'm never going to litigate, it doesn't matter, the contract should not be signed. I had that recently. I was helping my parents on a contract, and it was with an unaffiliated Jew who refused to go to Beis Din. And our fall back then was not secular court, but using arbitration. And that we're going to have to talk about. But we did not agree. They wouldn't agree to Beis Din. We wouldn't agree to secular court. So the default was going to an arbitration, because an arbitrator may be using secular law and he may not be using secular law. So that's the default. Yeah?
What about even like working for a corporation who you have no input in that type of contract, but these contracts are being signed every day?
Yeah, so then you're not involved and it's not an issue. Then it's not an issue. But we'll talk about how about if you aren't involved, but it's a public corporation, for example. Okay, so let's keep on going here. The Rashba says as follows. How about this concept of Dina de Malchusa Dina? What's Dina de Malchusa Dina? The law of the land is the law. So why wouldn't we say, in certain cases, who was here when we had Dina de Malchusa Dina? We covered that topic. It's a long time ago. Okay, we will be getting back to that. In the next few months, hopefully, Dina Malchusa Dina. So why wouldn't we say that court cases also, if a court decides, makes a decision, why wouldn't we say Dina Malchusa Dina, the law of the land is the law, and as a Jew, I am required to adhere to the secular law. So the Rashba, and this is how we paskin in the Ramah, says that Dina Malchusa Dina controls, governs us. It dictates that we adhere to secular in certain areas, in certain types of laws, but it would not apply to court decisions. So that would not be a valid argument to say that Dina de Malchusa Dina would apply to a court decision. Next question, an attorney. An attorney is asked to represent, by a Jewish client is asked to represent him. I want to serve a lawsuit in secular court against a Jewish defendant, let's say. And the question was posed to the Mishnah Halachas from Menashe Klein, a recent Rav, and a number of Rabbanim have been asked this question. Does that attorney have a prohibition to represent that Jewish client because that case should be in a Beis Din, not in a secular court? Question number one. Question number two, similar. Does he have to try to convince his client to go to a Beis Din? Can he not take the case? What would we say on that, guys? Doesn't that take, like we said in the Ramah before, anyone who facilitates the case is also. So the Mishnah Halachas says that he should tell his client, we should be in Beis Din. We should. That should be the comment. Beis Din, two litigants, you're Jewish, we go to Beis Din, we go to Beis Din. If he refuses, then he would not be permitted to take the case. Unless it fits into an exception of when you can go to secular court, which is a conversation we will start in a little bit and continue next time. And if he does take the case, and the defendant, the person they sues, if he's found liable, not only has the attorney facilitated going to a secular court, but he also has a Din of a Goslin. He is stolen because the money was taken from the defendant using a secular law. So unless he would have to ask Mechila from the defendant, you'd have to pay him back because he facilitated that. So he says, Upashu Nami Shimatovim Asarev, if the plaintiff that he's representing refuses to go to Beis Din or at least make an attempt to go to Beis Din, he would not be permitted to take that case. Okay, let's start going through the exceptions. When is it permitted to go to secular court? Now let me tell you a quick story. I don't know if this is going through your guys' minds, like, oh, I never plan on going to secular, I never plan on getting into a fight with anyone on money, I never am going to have an issue. But these things happen, unfortunately, all the time. They could happen between neighbors, and one is making a tremendous amount of noise. This could happen that you have an apartment building and somebody's not paying their due, and the other people in the apartment building have to deal with that person, and you have to figure out what's the right form. There's actually a special court in Israel dealing with partners in buildings and how they have to facilitate litigation between them. My grandfather was a mohel in a place called Flatbush, New York. Goes back a lot of years. And back then, when he was a mohel, the kids, the babies, used to stay in the hospitals 8, 9, 10 days. So many of the milas were in the hospitals. Nowadays, it's like It's like a drive-through service. You just, you know, you drive through, you have a baby, and here's your baby. And it's like, Baruch Hashem, medicine has advanced that it's like getting coffee, right? So you just drive through, get your hot dog, and you're done. So Baruch Hashem, that wasn't the situation. We're talking I'm guessing 1950s, 60s. So when my grandfather passed away, we went through all of his farm and we found all of his Mila books, all the books that he wrote the names of the children that he had been their mohel for, and there were easily over 10,000 that he did their Milas for. That's over 10,000 did all of his grandchildren, including me. First time he got onto a plane was to fly down to South Carolina. He's coming from New York, because that's where my father was stationed during Vietnam, so he flew down and did my bris. So there was one time, he was obviously an expert in the field, there was one time that somebody got upset at him and sued him in court for being negligent in the bris of his son. So he's there in front of the judge, and the judge says to him, "Are you Rabbi Wasserman?" My grandfather said, "Yes." "Are you Rabbi Morris Moshe Wasserman?" He said, "Yes." The judge says, "Rabbi Wasserman, you did my three sons, case dismissed." Anyone can get sued. There are a lot of baseless claims out there. And our question is, if the two litigants are not agreeing to go to a Beis Din, when is it permitted to go to secular court? So somebody asks, how about if it is a non-Jew? A Jew and a non-Jew, does the Jew have to try to convince him to go to a Beis Din, or would it be permitted to use a secular court? So there's a Medrash Tanchuma that says as follows, Asur Yisrael Lomar Lagoy, it is prohibited to say to the non-Jew, go with me to to the secular court. It is still a prohibition. Now the postgame explain, and we see over time how the halakha explain more and more on this, that it's a prohibition to go to a secular court if the non-Jew wants to go to a Beis Din or is amenable to go to a Beis Din. But if that's typically not the case, guys, typically they're not going to want to go. So the Tashbitz, writing in the 16th century, says, "Laduni ma'akum bar kosho," going to go with a non-Jew to a secular court, "Lohi tiru ela mahay tama dematzil mehem," it's mutter if it is the vehicle that we need to do in order to save ourselves financially. If that's our only way that we're going to do it, they're not going to go to the secular court, a Beis Din with us, we would be permitted to go to a secular court with them if he's going to agree to go to a Jewish court and will adhere to the psak, the decision of the Jewish court, that would be, we should go to the Jewish court with them. Otherwise, no. Nowadays, the Mishnah Halachas writes that we are lenient on this. The assumption is typically that if we are litigating with a non-Jew, they're not going to be amenable to go, and it would be permitted to go to a secular court. So if the non-Jew says, "I'm happy to go to a Jewish court," great, we go to Jewish court. Otherwise, the default would be we assume that they're not going to want to go, and it would be permitted to be in a non-Jewish court. Okay, next question.
Do you still have to ask?
I don't think so. This is the Mishnah Lachas. Nowadays that we just go to secular court is because they're not going to listen. The assumption is that they're not going to listen. I don't think, it would certainly based on the Medrash be good to ask. But oftentimes you're not talking to the other person. And you're not in conversation mode at that point. But if you are, if it's still a little bit on a friendly level, then it wouldn't be a bad thing to ask. But I don't think there's a requirement to. Yeah?
In a Jewish court, would the Beis Din be able to just say case dismissed because they knew the defendant? Or would they have to excuse themselves and call in a different Beis Din to rule on the case?
There are halachas as to when a judge in a Beis Din is nogea b'davar, that he would have to recuse himself. So just knowing him would not rise to the level of having to recuse themselves, but if they have dealings, financial deals, whatever else, then there. But there's specific halachas as to when a dayan would have to recuse himself from a case. Okay, next, very important. Daniel? Go ahead.
I was just to ask you, this leniency obviously is applicable if someone like sends you a summons. The non-Jew sends you a summons.
We'll get to that. If you're the defendant,
the
bottom line is yes. If you're the defendant and they are but a non-Jew certainly. How about a Jew? If a Jew serves you, and you're the defendant, then.
Yeah,
But we'll talk about that also in Mirtz Hashem next time. Okay, how about a Jew? Can you serve a Jew who is refusing to go to a Beis Din? Or are we stuck? B owes $1 million. B is refusing to pay. B says, I'm not going to Beis Din. If you want, sue me. And just know it's going to cost you $250,000 to sue me. I'm not paying you. And then I'm going to appeal. Legal fees it's going to cost. And then I'm going to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Are you sure you want to do this? So there's a Gemara in Baba Kama that says as follows. If you have, I'll say it in the English just to go a little bit quicker. If you called out to your friend and he did not answer you, lift up a large wall and throw it at him. That's not literal. The Rosh brings the opinion of Rav Paltai that says, what's going on here? If you have summoned somebody to a Beis Din and is refusing to go with you, we would say the common phrase in English now is throw the book at him. Throw the book at him. We're not literally throwing the book. But in other words, Rav Paltai says, if the defendant is refusing to go to Beis Din with you, you are permitted to take him to secular court. Now, based on this, Rav Paltai brought in the Rosh, we would not even have to get consent of the Beis Din. Try to take him to the Beis Din. There is no obligation for somebody to go to Beis Din. Even in nowadays in Israel, if you go to a Beis Din and you summon someone, somebody can just ignore it. They can just ignore it. They would have to consent to go. So if you're in that situation, you summon them to Beis Din, they refuse. And we'll see in a little bit what the process is of sending out a summons, trying to get somebody to Beis Din. Rav Paltai tells us that if the person refuses, you can go to secular court, even without, apparently, he would say, even without the consent of the Beis Din. Now, the Rambam disagrees and says, first you'd have to go to a Beis Din, and you'd have to go through the process, and we'll see it. Mirza in more detail next time that the process is going three times to the Beis Din. You go, what? You summons from the Beis Din three times. Summons, he refuses. Summons, he refuses. Summons, he refuses. You wait 30 days or whatever the protocol of the Beis Din is between each of the three summons. Then the Beis Din would give a consent to go to secular court. Typically, it's called a siruf, that they issue, they basically hold the defendant who refused to go to the Beis Din to come. To Beis Din, they hold him in contempt, a siruf. He's refusing to come, and that would be the permit to go through the secular court. So that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. If the defendant refuses to go to the Beis Din, then the Beis Din would give a consent to the plaintiff to then sue that defendant in secular court. The concept here is then it's not a disgrace to the Beis Din because with the consent of the Beis Din is extending its authority to include the secular court and use that as its arm to enforce what should be happening in the Beis Din. So with that consent, you can go to the secular court. Okay, just a couple more minutes and then we're going to have to close. Very quickly, there is an opinion, a number of opinions, that before the Beis Din would grant consent to go to a secular court, it should look into the substance of the case to see if the plaintiff really has a claim. It's not simply you come to Beis Din, okay, the defendant refused three times, here's your consent. They have to make sure that if that place was in Beis Din, that plaintiff would have a case against that defendant. There are other postkim that disagree, and they say that if the defendant refused three times, the Beis Din can give consent regardless to go to secular court. Here's your consent without looking into the substance that person would have a real case, would win in Beis Din. That is, I believe, the many Beis Bate Din adhere to that view. We're going to go through the technicalities, service three times. If the person doesn't come, go to the secular court without her having to look into the substance of the case. Once the person has a permission to go to the secular court, some poskim say that the plaintiff can only recover the amount that he could have recovered in a Beis Din, not more. So if the secular law permits a recovery that's more, and he's granted that recovery, some poskim say he would have to turn that back to the defendant. When he wins, he can only keep the amount. Others are of the view that once there is a consent to go to secular court, whatever you recover is yours. It's based on that Gemara that said, if you're refusing to answer the call, throw the wall against him, throw that heavy wall against it. That means, based on that the Gemara, that whatever the repercussions, even if the financial recovery of that plaintiff is higher, then he would have gotten a Beis Din. It is permitted for that plaintiff to keep the entire amount. Okay, we're going to have to close. It's time for Mincha. Amir Tashem, we will continue next time.